We start with the finite extension of QP, which will be the field of coefficients as usual. We have a ring of integer. We have the residue field. And we are going to consider the group GL2 of QP. Although, I mean, most of what I say in the beginning is going to also apply to more general things, but we stick to that case because it's the only one I understand. So we define the representation of the L representation of G as a set of pi's, which are so these are L Banach space. They come with a continuous unitary representation of G. Admissible. And we are going to assume that they are of finite length. And plus that there is a central character. And then we have the category of locally analytic representation of G, which is the same thing. But instead of unitary, we put locally analytic, and we don't assume that it is finite length. And then we have two functors. So we have, if we have a pi, which is a unitary representation of G, then we can consider the subspace of locally analytic vectors. So this was studied by Schneider and Tettelbaum, and they proved that this is exact functor by Schneider and Tettelbaum. And if you go in the other direction, if you have a, let's say, a locally analytic function, an admissible locally analytic function of G, then you can try to look at its universal completion. So this was studied by Emerson and Breuil, for example. So, but now there is a word of warning, is that this is not always defined. So what should it satisfy? Should just satisfy the fact that if you have a W going to a pi, which is a representation, unitary representation of G, then it should factor uniquely through the universal completion. So, as I say, there is a warning that this W hat does not have to exist. So, but if it exists, it is unique. No. So maybe I give you one example where there is no universal completion. I mean, I think that. So if you look, I mean, not in that case, because I would not be able to find a counterexample here. But if you look at the locally analytic functions on ZP, then you can view it as a module of the group 0, 1 just by translation. So if you take 1, B, 0, 1, phi of x is phi of x minus B. So this gives you a locally analytic function of this group. And if I'm not completely mistaken, this one does not have a universal completion. So this has no universal completion. But what is funny is that if you let the semigroup P plus, which is ZP minus 0, ZP 0, 1 act, So in that case, you have AB 0, 1, phi of x, which is phi of x minus b over a. So when this is defined, and 0 if it is not. So this is b x in b plus a zp and not. Okay, so you get you get an action of this semigroup, and now there is a universal completion, and the universal completion is what you would think it would be. It's a continuous function. Then in that case, LA of ZP hat is just a continuous function. So it seems that in order to have a universal completion, you need to have some kind of discrete thing that acts, something like that. So that's the first warning. And the second warning is that even if W hat exists, then there is no reason that it is non-zero. So W hat can be zero. And it is very often zero. Okay, but anyway, you have these two functors, and because of the way they are defined, you have natural maps. So W goes to W hat, and then you take locally analytic vectors. And you also have a map which goes to the universal completion of pi n to pi. Okay, and you could ask, are these maps, I mean, they are natural, so natural maps have a tendency to be isomorphisms. So you can ask that. So the answer is no for the first one. So let me give you one example that was considered by Breuil and Emerson. So we start from two characters, delta 1, delta 2, two characters of QP star. And in order to have so it's like this. You take universal completion and take analytic vectors. And in order to have a universal completion, I will need that Vp of delta 1 of p plus Vp of delta 2 of p is equal to 0. So that will ensure that the central character is unitary in what I do. And you can take for W the locally analytic induction from the Borel of the following character. Well, I take delta 2 tensor delta 1 x norm x minus 1. So I'm sorry for the strange normalizations, but I'm used to that. And so what you get, you get that W hat is 0 if the periodic valuation of delta 1 of p is strictly negative. So that's a result of Emerton. And in general, what you are going to get is that you have an exact sequence like this. So your W, so if you are in the opposite situation, delta 1 of p, let's say, is greater than 0, because I don't want to look at things where they are unitary, then you have W that injects inside W hat n, and then there is a quotient, which is the induced representation from delta 1 tensor delta 2 x norm x to the minus 1 goes to 0. And this is true except in some special case. You have to assume that delta 1 delta 2 minus 1 x norm x minus 1 is not a power of x to the I. Okay, so and so this result was basically conjectured by Breuil and by Emerson, and so it was proved. I mean, this is some kind of union of work by many people, so Breuil, Emerson, Berger-Breuil, Pascunas, myself, and also Liu, Xie, and Zhang. So as you see from this example, you can very well have, the locally analytic vectors can grow once you universally complete. What? It should not have belonged to this state, sorry. Okay, so what about the other functor? Well, for the other one, so for the other one, well, the answer is yes. So theorem is that if you take pi in a set L of G, and if you take the locally analytic vector and take the universe, then what the theorem says that the locally analytic vectors have a universal completion, and this universal completion is pi. And maybe I should put some restriction, say that this is true at least if p bigger than 5. Yeah, and so maybe I should mention somewhere that what I'm going to say from now on is some joint work with Gabriel Dospinescu. So where does this condition come from? So let me remind you some things about functors that you can attach to a representation like this. So we define OE plus to be OL double bracket T, and then OE to be OE plus, and then we invert T, and we complete for the periodic topology, and then we take E to be the field of fraction of OE. And so I remind you that there is a functor pi goes to D of pi, and what you get here is an E vector space plus commuting semi-linear actions of phi. So phi, it acts on this ring by phi of t equals 1 plus t to the p minus 1. And gamma, which is isomorphic to zp star. So if you have an a here, you have a sigma a here. And sigma a of t is 1 plus t to the a minus 1. So you get something like that. And on top of it, this vector space is etal, so it is slope 0 for phi. Okay. And so the correct condition that we need Yeah, because you have to learn how to do that. So the actual condition that you need is that you want that d of pi is an Eta alpha gamma module over E, which means that in fact the IE, the dimension over E of this d of pi is finite. Okay, and with the condition I put, this is automatic. If p is bigger than 5, this is a deep result of Pascunas. And it should also be true for p equals 2 and 3, but it remains to be proved and should be true in general. Okay. So how do you prove this kind of theorem? Well, the key ingredient is the fact that you can actually describe a pi in terms of d of pi. So and here maybe I should say almost, because there are some finite dimensional things that get lost in the process, but they are not really bothersome for what we want to prove. So maybe let me remind you how this goes. And I think that we are going to see a much more general construction in the talk of Zabradi by so more general. Zabradi-Stoke. So how does it go? So now it's tricky. So we start from an Eta alpha gamma module over E, and we start from a character delta from QP star to L star. And so what we do, we construct a sheaf on P1. On P1, which is P1 of QP, which is equivariant under the action of GL2 of QP. So equivariant under G. So, with the usual action ABCD, X equals AX plus B over CX plus D. So how do we do that? Well, what we do is that we translate in terms of phi gamma modules some natural action that we have on some space attached to the character delta. And so we define B of delta to be the space of continuous function on QP, which are continuous. And you assume that at infinity, it's almost equal to phi of x. So you want that delta of x, phi of x, as a limit at zero, so continuous at zero. And so there is a natural action on B of delta, and let me give you the action on the dual. So the action on the dual, so if you take the mu in the dual, then the action is the natural one, the integral of P1 of phi A, B, see this mu is equal to the integral of delta of cx plus d phi of ax plus b over cx plus d mu. So anyway, so you take this action and you translate it in terms of phi gamma module, and what you get in the end is a sheaf, which to some open compact subset of P1 associates something that we call D cross U. And so, for example, if U equals DP, you want that D cross DP is equal to our phi gamma module D, and on which you have already a P plus action, and this P plus action is defined by PKA B 0 1 Z equals 1 plus T to the B phi to the K sigma A of Z. Okay, and so when you restrict your sheaf to ZP and you restrict the action to P plus, then you will get just this action here. And because you have an equilibrium sheaf on D cross P1, which is a space of global section, there is an action of G. And now we define a compatible pair. So you say that D, well, maybe I should not write here, is that? You say that D delta is G compatible. Where? Where, here? You want me to add it? Yeah, it depends on delta, I know, but I wanted to skip it, but let's. That's okay. I put it back. Well, you say that D delta is G compatible. If you can actually split this thing, so if there are two representations, pi of D delta, pi prime of D delta, which are representation, unitary admissible representation of G, such that you have an exact sequence, 0 goes to pi prime of D delta dual, goes to D cross delta P1, goes to pi of D delta, goes to 0. So I should say something here is that if P prime and pi exist, then they are unique up to finite dimensional things. So pi and D delta, pi prime, D delta, they are uniquely determined by this exact sequence up to finite dimensional thing. Dimensional rep. And I mean, there is only one case where they are not unique, basically. So I mean, they are essentially determined by that, except in a very special case where you have the Steinberg appearing and you have problems. But usually, these ones are uniquely determined if they exist. Okay. And so, what is the theorem? So, the first thing is that if D delta is G compatible, this implies that the dual pair is also G compatible. So, if you take the dual and delta minus 1, this is also G compatible. And the two representations which are here are switched. Pi prime of D chetch delta minus 1 is equal to pi of D delta, and same for pi of D delta write the result. Papa of pi chase delta minus 1 is equal to pi prime of d delta. Okay, so if duality exchanges the two representations which are here. So that's the first thing. Second thing is that you can ask whether this is going to be J-compatible any time. So if you assume that D is irreducible, then there are three cases. Either you are dimension 1, dimension 2, dimension bigger than 3. Okay. In the first case, d delta is always G-compatible. In the second case, there is only one delta for which it is G-compatible. There is a unique delta d, and this delta d is just the determinant of d. So this is a character sigma module of rank 1, to which there is an attached a character of QP star times x norm x minus 1, which is G compatible. And in dimension bigger than 3, it's never G compatible. So this theorem summarizes some quite deep work. So for example, the fact that there is only one delta D and that it is never G compatible here, this is a consequence of Pascunas's work. And the fact that this delta D gives you something that is G compatible is, well, it's what gives the periodic local Langlands correspondence, and something that it's very difficult to prove directly. You have to use some very indirect arguments to get it. Okay, so that's general, but for our problem, what? Oh, yeah. Well, every time I mention Pascunas, you put P bigger than 5. I mean, it's clear that his theorem is also true for P equals 2 and 3, but okay, and the main point for us is that, in fact, if you start from a pi in Rappel of G, then what you get is that pi is equal to pi of d chesh of pi omega pi if omega pi is a central character of pi. Okay, and so this is again true only sometimes up to a finite dimensional representation. So some up to finite dimensional representations. Well, the upshot of this is that if you want to prove the theorem that is over there, you can assume that pi is of this shape. Okay, so can assume. Pi equals pi of d and delta. Okay, this is good because now we can use this to actually describe rather precisely the locally analytic vector of pi. So for this, I have to remind you a little bit of things. So I will define a subring of OE, some kind of things that converge in some non-zero annuli. So what you do, instead of inverting P, you T, you invert it not completely. So B is an integer, I'm going to tell you. So NB is equal to P minus 1 times P to the B minus 1. So this is such that if you take 1 over NB, it's the p-adic valuation of P to, I mean, zeta minus 1, where zeta is a P to the Bth root of unity. And then you take the p-adic completion of that. Okay, so you get a subfield, a subring of OE. And now you define D dagger B. First, because you have a D, which is etal, you can choose an OE lattice D naught. So OE lattice and so now you're going to get a phi gamma module, which is etal over OE. OE lattice. I just want to have to have an integral structure. So you take D0 inside D, and then you define D0 dagger B to be the biggest OE dagger B module of finitely generated such that, well, let's call it M, such that when you apply phi to M, you land into the submodule generated by M, but you have to take into account the fact that phi makes denominators in T bigger, and so you are supposed to land into the module generated over O E dagger B plus 1 M. And then there is a theorem that we proved with Cherbonnier, and there is another proof by a paper with Berger, which is the following. Ah, yeah. There is a trick. So the theorem tells you the following. So there exists some integer M, which depends on only on D, such that when you look at this module D0 dagger B, well then it is free of rank the dimension of D for B bigger than M. Okay, and when this is the case, well, you can recover, and then you can recover D0 from this one by just extending the scalar. Dagger B. D0 dagger B. And you can also pass from one to the next one by just entering by the suitable ring. Okay? So that's the theorem that tells you that every phi gamma module is over convergent. And so we define D dag B to be just D0 dagger B, and then you invert P. So this is going to be a lattice in there. So that's what you will get on the phi gamma module side. You have some these submodules. Now on the GL2 of QP side, what you have by construction is that D0 cross P1 this is a lattice inside a G invariant lattice inside a D cross P1. So it's a G invariant lattice in D cross P1. And so it gives you a lattice when you take the image inside pi. Okay, so you get a lattice. So you get a lattice which I call pi naught inside pi. Delta. In the beginning it was not supposed to be valued, but now if I have pi of this shape, it has to be. So write it down, is that the central character of pi is this delta. So, because my pi is unitary, delta is unitary. So you have a lattice inside, and it is a G invariant. So you get, this gives you a valuation on pi, for which this is going to be the unit ball. Okay? And now, the local analytic vectors are some inductive limits of vectors which are analytic on some open subgroups. And so let me define them precisely. So this M gives you four elements, one which we call AM plus, which is 1 plus P to the M, 0, 0, 1, AM minus, which is the same thing, but 1 plus P to the M has been put in this corner. Then you have a UM plus, which is 1 P to the M, 0, 1. And you have a UM minus, which is 1, 0, P to the M, 1. And then you define a subspace, pi B, to be the set of V in pi, with the following condition. So maybe I should first introduce BM to the alpha. So this is going to be a short thing for taking AM plus minus 1 to the alpha 1. And then you have four terms, UM minus minus 1 to the alpha 4, where alpha 1, alpha 4, are integers, and absolute value of alpha is alpha 1 plus alpha 4. Okay, so you take the V in pi, which are such that when you apply BM alpha to them, and you take the periodic evaluation of this element, then it goes to zero rapidly enough. Rapidly enough means that you want to the M over NB times alpha goes to plus infinity when alpha goes to infinity. Okay, so this gives you a subspace of pi. And in fact, Amis theorems about the characterization of locally analytic functions on ZP tells you that M is the M that is over there.
Oh, sorry,
same M. Well, maybe a bigger one. Well, anyway, it's some M. But it does not, if I'm not mistaken, with the normalization, should not depend on M, this pi of B. But you definitely want to take M to be at least that one. Okay, and amis tells you, so it's the characterization of local analytic function in terms of their Mahler expansion, that the locally analytic functions, locally analytic vectors in pi, is the inductive limit of this VB. And so on pi B, sorry, you have a natural valuation given by just a minimum of this, which makes it into a Banach space. And then here you get an inductive limit, compact inductive limit of Banach spaces. And so the main result is that, in fact, pi B is the image of D dagger B cross P1, by which I mean that I take the Z, so that when you take the restriction to ZP of Z and the restriction to ZP of WZ, they all land inside D dagger B. Okay, so let me give some idea of the proof. So sketch, I mean ideas in the proof. So where does it come from? Well, first of all, you have to understand what this is exactly. And what you prove not with not so much difficulty, that this D dagger B is exactly the set, the space of Z, which satisfies something weaker than that, but which satisfies the following. So you should have that V pi of AM, UM plus minus 1 of Z to the power some alpha minus P to the M over NB alpha. This goes to plus infinity. So that's not exactly what you want, because you just have UM plus that appears here, but it's just a translation of the definition of the D dagger, basically. And it satisfies the same thing, V pi of, it's restriction to ZP of this thing. And restriction of ZP of W of UM minus 1 to the alpha WZ, where W is, maybe I did not define what W was. W is 0, 1, 1, 0. And with the same kind of condition. So it's close to what you want, but it's not exactly what you want. You only have, every time you only have one of these four elements that are taken into account. And so you want to prove something stronger in the other direction. And for this, you use two things. And maybe also for people who followed several of my talks so far. So what I'm doing here is give you direct characterizations of locally analytic vectors, and even better of the one for a fixed radius of convergence. And so in the proof that I used before, it was done by duality, by some duality argument, as following the work of Steiner at Tenterbaum. So this proof gives you more information and is direct. And in fact, it's much easier. And it was found by Dostinescu. But yeah. So what I'm saying is that this is not at all enough to conclude.
Yeah. Okay, but here we don't even have a condition for AM plus, AM
minus. No, there is no condition for AM plus. We don't know anything. We're just translating the appartenance to this thing. Okay. But I mean, that's nevertheless why I thought in the beginning a long time ago that such a statement could be true. That because if you take an element here, then you already know that actually if you apply one of these operators, it behaves the way it should. So in the other direction, what we define something we call M dagger B, which is 1 plus T phi to the M D naught dagger B minus M. And so this lives inside D dagger B cross 1 plus P to the M VP. So it's some kind of lattice there. And so the proposition is the following. So this proposition is something that has been used all over the place in the theory, that relates the action of gamma, mainly AM plus minus one, to the action of to the action of T, meaning UM plus minus one. Okay, and so the theorem tells you that in fact these two actions are almost the same, and so. By which I mean that if you take AM plus minus 1 to the power k, M dagger B, then this is equal to UM plus minus 1 to the power k, M dagger B for all k. And this is good because we already know what happens for this one, and because we have this kind of equality, we can deduce what's going to happen for this one too. The second thing is that this space is almost stable by the action of W, meaning that if you invert AM plus or UM plus minus one, then this is stable by W. And so, which implies that, and this is all for all k in Z. And so this implies that when you apply W to something like AM plus minus 1 M dagger M, then you are going to land into the same thing, but maybe with a small loss, AM plus minus 1 to the power k minus c, M dagger M. And if you put the two things together, so this W allows you, so up to now you know what is happening for UM plus minus 1, because your module has been constructed with respect to this one, basically. The first part of the proposition tells you that AM plus minus 1 just behaves like UM plus minus 1. And because of W, you can switch AM plus into AM minus, and you can switch UM plus into UM minus. And so what you get from that is that BM alpha of AM plus minus 1 to the k, M dagger M B, this sits inside am plus minus 1 to the power alpha plus k minus c times the same thing. And this is exactly what you need to prove to prove a converse. So, I mean, what I explained you here basically tells you that pi b is inside the image, and the estimates that are here are exactly what you need to prove the converse. Okay, so now let's prove the theorem. And I don't want to say more because, I mean, these estimates are very technical, but they have been used for something like 15 years now, so it's not like it is completely new. So, okay, so now we are interested in pi and hat. Okay? So, if it exists, how do we obtain it? Well, what we have to do, we have to choose m inside pi n, which is going basically to be the unit ball of this completion, which is open, g stable. So that is going to give you some unitary completion. And if you want it to be the universal completion, you want your m to be minimal. So minimal up to scalar and minimum up to a scalar. So you have to prove that such a thing exists. So what does it mean, minimum up to scalar? It means that if you have a second one, then this one is going to be contained into a multiple of the other one. Okay, so now let's remind you that on D, we have a psi from D to D, which is the left inverse of phi. And what you prove is that you can choose some k, so that when you take t minus k d dagger b plus 1, then you land inside t minus k d dagger b. So now let's take our lattice, which is open. Okay, I assume we have our m. And we choose an a bigger than the 2m over there. Then I say that up to, up to taking a lattice which is homothetic to M, up to making a homothety, we can assume that M contains T minus K times D dagger A, which we view inside D cross Zp, which we view inside D cross P1. Well, it does not contain that. It contains the image of that. So why is it true? It's because this one is in fact, it's bounded. So because it is bounded, it's going to, one of its multiples is going to land inside this open lattice. And now, so what do we get? We write a z, we take a b which is an integer which is bigger than 1, and this z we can write as a sum from I equals 0 to p b minus 1 of p to the I, p to the b, I 0 1 applied to psi of 1 plus t minus I z. And so what we get from this formula is that, in fact, if M contains this, it's also going to contain anything of this shape. Okay? So this implies that M contains image of T minus T D dagger A plus B for all B. But if you take the union of all these things, then you see very easily that M contains P an intersected with P pi naught, where pi naught was the unit ball corresponding to D naught. So, I mean, the truth is that the union of the T minus K D dagger A plus B, this contains what I call D dagger, which is a union of all the things intersected P D naught. So this translates into this statement. And so you see that M is commensurable with the lattice that gives you the completion pi. And so what you get from there is that completion with respect to M to M is pi. Yeah, and maybe I should have pointed out that M is going to be contained in some P minus K pi naught by construction. So anyway, the completion with respect to any lattice is pi, so it tells you that the universal completion is actually pi. So let me finish with two remarks. And I don't know how general they are. Probably they are only true for GL2 of QP, but who knows? So remarks. So the first one is that the proof tells you that this pi b itself is dense in pi for b big enough. So by Schneider and Teitelbaum, we know that pi an is dense inside of pi, but here what comes out of the proof is that if you are at a finite level, this is still true. I have no idea whether this kind of statement will be true in general. Pi is topologically irreducible, yes. No, pi is not necessarily irreducible, but yeah, no, but at, but it's not G stable, this pi B. sorry. I was confused. No, this pi B, maybe I should have said pi B is GL2 of ZP stable. But not G stable. So that's not a remark. And the second remark is that what you get from the proof is that this pi an has some kind of coherence meaning the following. So if you look at pi b plus 1, so I told you it was stable by GL2 of ZP. So you can ask whether you can recover it from the lower level, pi b. Okay? And what you get is that, yes, you can. So you get that this is equal to 1, 0, 0, p pi b plus the sum I equals 0 to p minus 1 of p I 0, 1 pi b. So I mean these are just elements which are distance one in the tree to the identity. So you get the fact that pi b actually generates pi n as a G module, but you get something stronger. You get that to go from one level to the other, you just have to take the elements in the tree which are close, which are distance one. And I don't know whether this kind of property is general or not at all. So I stop here.